20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast, where you're being joined today on a bizarro day. Usually we don't get Thursdays with Justice. We usually get Tuesdays with Justice, but you know him. He's Justice Mosqueda. You can find him on social media at JMOSQ and, of course, acmepackingcompany.com. Justice and I are recording this at 2:30 p.m. on Wednesday prior to any transaction. So if the Packers made any sort of crazy trades after that, we apologize for not breaking it down. But Justice, how the heck are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing good. Can't complain. Day off from camp, I had to figure out what to do. I wrote up a 53-man roster projection. Did you see the linebacker that we worked out?
I saw that you wrote the article that he was a former quarterback. Here's my thing. When they work out a player, I'm sorry, you're not getting looked up on my end. That might be the one sort of barrier for me of like, I'm not caring yet. As soon as they sign said player, I don't care if it's practice squad, futures deal, anything. All right, you get my attention. But workout, I can't bring myself to do it every time.
I'll do the rough background stuff.
Love it.
I'm not gonna watch the film, but yeah. Kid played at four colleges in five years. Crazy. And he was a high school quarterback.
We're gonna see more and more of that, would be my guess, is a lot of transfers for some of these players during their time in college and new school. Especially like if it doesn't work out one place, but a kid is like super talented, all right, then he's going to try to go somewhere else. If it doesn't work there, go somewhere else. And somebody's probably always willing to give him a chance. I don't know if that's what happened here or whatever, but yeah, very interesting. And like I said, assuming we're probably going to see more of that moving forward.
Yeah, for sure.
Let me start by asking you this, Justice. We are 6 days into Packers training camp. Two of those have been padded practices. You are obviously as much, if not more than anyone, kept track of everything that's been going on at camp from, you know, just about everyone that's been tweeting there. You've probably even seen more raw video than I have because I haven't actually gone out and looked at any of the video yet. So what have been your just kind of key takeaway from what you've seen from camp through 6 days so far?
Yeah, I read a lot of tweets. I get push notifications from people and then I go watch the illegal videos that are being filmed from the stands, which I always appreciate.
Can I say something on the illegal videos really quick here? I understand that I, as a credentialed media member, cannot take illegal videos. I have nothing against anyone in the stands that is taking said illegal videos and posting them online. This is not my battle to fight, right? But two things. One, if you're not going to be able to shut it down from the fan side of things, then let us be able to do it as well. And number two, the craziest thing is that I'm not allowed to retweet those. So not only can I not take them, not only can I not post them, if somebody else has already done the dirty work of, you know, finding the illegal videos and posting them out there, I can't even make commentary or repost them. That is, you know, first world problems to the billionth degree. I get it. I get to be out there at Packers practice every day, so nobody cares about my complaints. But if I have a complaint, it's that, Justice.
So I think one of the interesting things here is like, I think it was Wilde brought it up like 2 days ago and talked to LaFleur at the presser and said something along the lines of like, we know UK Abahas everywhere or something like that. And then Matt was like, what the hell are you talking about? Like, yes, we filmed this. This is my job.
It was Nagler.
That's who it was. Yeah. That's who it was. I got to bust Nagler's balls for that. Sorry, Wilde, for the stray. Let's go Ducks. But like, if they want more informed questions, Andy, I know you're a sicko enough that I know you would be watching at minimum like the team drills, right?
Oh,
if they have
yeah.
the film up after practice. Because like they do some of that stuff for like the Senior Bowl and things like that. I don't know if people realize that like they film all the Senior Bowl stuff and then you can get on the iPads and things like that now. But like a couple years ago, I guess this is pre-pandemic. I'm getting old. Pre-pandemic, like they basically just had like it would be like a giant room with a bunch of couches and, you know, there's like four of the cowboy controllers that, you know, you're rewinding film, going to the next place, stuff like that. And you just kind of get in it with a group, and, you know, it would be media people. And then also like scouts from teams that are like breaking down film after practice and stuff like that. I get that they don't want their stuff out there. Right. I genuinely think like the Packers would probably not broadcast the games if they didn't have to. You just have to look at it. They didn't do family night until last year. Right.
Yep.
You know, over outside of the market. But yeah, they're so strict about that stuff. And it's not like you're putting in like a bunch of weird trick plays or anything. Like, you're running inside zone, dog. Like, we all know. Yeah. We know what this is.
Yeah. No, it is what it is. I totally get it. I actually put it more on the NFL. I think the NFL should have more like mandatory, like you have to have these many open practices, and the fans and media are allowed to take whatever videos they want during that. I just wish it was a mandated thing throughout the course of the league, but it is what it is. We get by. And actually, to thank the Packers, if there was practice all 22, I think I would have a problem. I would not sleep. I would be watching practice all 22, probably way too much. So it's probably actually very healthy for me that practice all 22 is not at my disposal. I'll just put it that way.
Skip the indies. I saw, what was it? It must have been yesterday. So it would have been Tuesday. They were doing the ball security drills where they're yanking on each other's legs as they're like going down to the ground and stuff. And I was like, I just can't believe it, because I'm still, you know, I still got the line coach in me, right?
Yeah.
I'm just like, the skill players are just farting around during indies. They're just playing games, man.
You've got the ball on a chain too, the football on a chain, and guys running with it and guys trying to yank it out. One of my favorite aspects so far of camp has been Matt LaFleur getting legitimately upset. I think it was kind of in jest, but kind of like also step it up to Luke Getsy when they're going through the gauntlet drill and the coaches have boxing gloves on and they're trying to punch out the ball. And Getsy was just kind of like, bop, bop. Like, he was not, you know, doing it with any sort of force whatsoever. Matt was pretty quick to get after him and be like, Getsy, you know, get after him with the punches. So
yeah, that was you're fantastic. Wasting time if you're not trained in it. I used to do that with they had like the pencil pads that you would like, they come up to like your arm. And they look like a pencil on the tips. And that's what I would do for punch out stuff when we did ball security things, because, you know, we did it as a team at the high school level. And the hell else am I going to do with offense? If you're touching the ball, bad things have happened. Horrendous things have happened.
I want to see I want to see a greased up football. Let's see it. Let's up the ante a little bit here. Like, grease.
Have they brought out the water bottle yet? The Gatorade bottle where they squirt the ball for the wet snaps and all that stuff.
Not that I've seen. It could be just that I have not been looking for it, though. That's for sure. All right. Outside of that sort of stuff, what's kind of caught your eye from, you know, anything that could actually matter throughout this season, or, you know, just through the first 6 days of camp, if anything?
One of the big ones, Jordan Morgan, obviously, when Goot comes out in before the first practice of training camp and says it's an open competition left tackle. And then Moore basically doesn't get left tackle snaps for the entire week because he's filling in at both guard spots. Just doesn't match up with what you said, right? Obviously, like, there's been injuries to Elton, injuries to Banks, stuff like that. But if you really wanted him to test left tackle and have it be that open competition that you said it was, there's ways to create those opportunities. I also think it's interesting, I guess, the other part on the offensive line. So, like, the top seven guys, right? It's last year's starters and Banks. And then Morgan is working in and Jacob Monk is working in. But then that eighth guy so far has been Travis Glover. I think from a 53-man standpoint, that's a really important thing to note. Yep. Because, you know, I think Travis Glover, Kadeem Telfour, John Williams, who is still dealing with his back injury, right? We're probably, and I get maybe like Donovan Jennings, if you want to
say maybe Jennings too. Yep.
Yeah. Those guys are kind of fighting for one spot, right? I think the Packers are probably going to keep nine in week one. Unless there's, you know, a funky injury or they want to go really low with the offensive skill players. It's probably going to be one guy. And right now, Travis Glover seems to be the leader there. So I think that's interesting. Matthew Golden, like, I'm not surprised Anthony Belton isn't getting worked in. Like, not even me, though he was a second round pick, the Packers, unless they clear the runway like they did at safety last year, where they picked three guys and they're like, hey, one of you guys is going to start. They really don't work in rookies into first team lineups very quickly at all. The fact that Matthew Golden is getting in and he's making plays, and I see you tweeting out like he just caught like a 70 yard touchdown. And it seems like this stuff is happening every day. It's hard not to get excited about that, Andy. It's hard not to get excited about that.
Not only is it starting to, or like, is it happening every day? It's growing every day. Like, he's getting more opportunities. He's making more of those opportunities. You see less of the mental mistakes. You see more of the raw natural talent taking over. So it's like he's flipping the switch even more every single day, which is what I'm probably most excited about. The offensive line stuff's interesting too. I always talk about, like, if they just had one of those guys, like there was either Telfort or John Williams or Donovan Jennings or a Travis Glover or like just one of those, I think you almost maybe get more of an opportunity just to keep 10. I actually think sometimes it's to the detriment of those guys when you've got four or five of those guys that are maybe competing for one or two spots. As a GM, I probably feel a lot more confident that I can just release the whole lot of them and I'm going to get one of them back on the practice, one or two of them back on the practice squad. I'm not going to lose five offensive linemen. So I'll get a Donovan Jennings and a John Williams back on the practice squad. We'll be good to go. And if I somehow lose a Kadeem Telfort, I'm probably not going to lose any sleep over it. So I almost think that the depth there is probably almost a little bit worse, where rather than because they have that depth, they want to keep 10, because they have that depth, it's almost more enticing just to keep 9.
Okay. This is a good pivot. I want to talk about a different position, which is almost the inverse of that. So linebacker.
Okay. Yes.
Linebacker is going to be weird, right? Again, you have a lot of offensive skill players, right? We have probably six receivers that are going to make this team, not including Christian Watson at this point. Yep. You have the potential to keep four running backs. You have the potential to keep four tight ends, something that I know Bisaccia would want, right? You're going to keep five safeties because that's what Bisaccia wants.
Yep.
Five cornerbacks. You're going to need five. I don't know if you have five. You're going to need five to get through, like, just to make sure you could get through an NFL game. So yep. I think at linebacker, especially with the fact that Colin Oliver, you know, can play some of that off ball Sam type of role, right? That strong side linebacker. I think it's going to be tough to keep more than five. Right now, the Packers have seven linebackers under contract. I think it's pretty clear the starters, at least at the beginning of the year, are going to be Quay Edger and Cooper in the two linebacker sets, McDuffie coming off the bench in the three linebacker sets. Their preferred guy off of the bench at this point seems to be Isaiah Simmons.
Yep.
I don't think Tyrone Hopper is going to get cut. So that's your five, right? The other two guys on that team, Christian Welch, who they cut last year, immediately got scooped up and ended up playing not just regular season games for one team, but two teams. Who knows if you're going to be able to land him back on the practice squad, right? That's a legitimate concern when you have a guy who can contribute to special teams like that and just bounced around the league and has found open roster spots, right? That leaves your only practice squad guy that maybe knock on wood, you can get him, is Jamin Johnson, who obviously had a market because he was 260th ranked on the consensus draft board in a draft class with like 258 draft picks, right? So he was like right on the edge of being one of those draftable guys, which kind of, the media grades don't have to be gospel. We see that, like, Isaiah Bond still hasn't been picked up by a team, right? And he was
ranked on high.
Yeah. But I'm just using that as like an example. Yeah. Like, these grades aren't perfect. But he also received, I think it was like $115 million guaranteed, or $115,000, sorry.
That'd be a big UDFA.
Huge number. $115,000 guaranteed, which also showed that, he sort of had a market. So do you think that no other team will call Colin for Jamin Johnson? I don't know if you could say that at this point, right? So I think that's maybe one reason why the Packers are like, who's this quarterback turned linebacker who ran really fast, and he might at least be able to be a practice squad body for us, which at this point I don't know if you can 100% pin that down, right now and say, we definitely have a practice squad guy. And it might be more intelligent to use a roster spot that way than on a 18th wide receiver or whatever.
So here's my initial take. I think the second part of this is maybe easier than the first. My guess is they feel like they need one more linebacker just for preseason games. Quay's not going to play. You're probably not playing Edgerrin a ton. And then you get to like, how much are you playing McDuffie? How much are you playing? Yeah. My guess is Isaiah Simmons can play a bunch. We know Tyron Hopper is going to play a ton. You would think.
Yeah. Jamon Johnson.
Yes. And then Jamon Johnson and Christian Welch are probably playing, but like, you probably need at least one more linebacker because Colin Oliver is not going to be maybe cleared for any of the preseason games. If so, it's going to be at the end. And they probably put him more as a defensive end would be my guess. I feel like they probably just need one more guy in that room just to kind of get through fourth quarter preseason game stuff where you maybe don't want to play McDuffie, Cooper, Quay, maybe even Hopper by that time. Like it might just be Welch and Jamon Johnson. And you probably, if one of those guys go down, you're like, all right, I guess we got to put McDuffie back in the fourth quarter of this Packers Jets first preseason game. I think they just want one more body. That's my guess, but practice squad, certainly a portion of that as well. As far as like keeping players, I don't think Jamon Johnson has much of a chance at this point, but crazier things have happened. I think that's probably.
High expectations, but the space really was for Christian Welch, Jamon Johnson, and Isaiah Simmons to really compete for one practice or one roster spot.
Roster spot. Yep.
And it seems like Simmons is running away with it, right?
Totally agreed. Yeah. So then I think the question becomes: so I forget who reported on this. It was either Huber or maybe it was Pete Doherty. I forget which one. But they wrote, I think it was Huber, which players have been on at least three special teams units. And he had Welch, Simmons, Hopper, Zane Anderson, Valentine, Bullard, Brooks, those ones. And I know this player's not on there, but I know Bo Melton is on like all of them as well. So my question more becomes, you know, we know Simmons is going to make it. Hopper's going to make it. Valentine's going to make it. Bullard's going to make it. I think Brooks probably has got a great chance at running back. I think he's probably ahead of Wilson at this point. So you then get to potentially Christian Welch but you have Christian Welch, Zane Anderson, Bo Melton. Can you keep all three of those guys? I think that becomes a little bit more interesting. Maybe you can. Maybe I think Zane probably
tight end. Are we cutting a running back? Like,
yeah,
that's those are going to be the interesting. Like, I think it's kind of structured pretty well outside of like, well, I guess there's a long way to go, right? The bottom end of the cornerback depth chart, defensive end, the offensive line. I think there's still time for that to shake out, but the rest of the positions, I feel like there's a pretty clear pecking order. And then the question is just, how many guys do you want to keep at these positions, right? And that's where, you know, these big conversations, right? Where it's like, okay, running back, are they going to keep four? Well, if they keep three, who do they cut? And is Marshawn Lloyd healthy? Like, this is his fourth injury, fifth, if you want to count the appendectomy, which I'm not sure is fair, in a year, right? That's not a great situation. Tight end. Sasha really likes keeping tight ends. I don't know what to tell you guys. Safeties, I mean, you just listed off all those guys who played on all these different special teams units, right? Brooks was the only offensive player, I think.
Melton, I think you're right.
Yeah, yep. So, yeah, I mean, he wants to use defenders on special teams. Like, that's kind of been his whole thing. Like, the biggest takeaway in the Bisaccia era is wide receivers don't play special teams. I want better players in those situations, which, like, you know, you ended up getting a Bo Melton out of it. A guy like a Malik Heath is kind of an exception in that way too, but I think it's going to be hard for Malik Heath to make this team. He wants a lot of defenders. And then if they're not a defender, he wants them to be a tight end or a bigger body back, right? We've seen, like, you know, Brooks, AJ Dillon, like someone who at least vaguely looks like a tight end, right? He wants these 250 pound guys. And if they're not 250 pounds, he wants them to be a cornerback or a safety.
I think you're probably right very much about that. And that's why I think like guys like, you know, Zane Anderson have such a great chance to make the team. And, mm-hmm. Some of these linebackers and, Yeah, those special teams.
I saw Ken tweet about this earlier. I love Ken. So we bust balls in the DMs and stuff like that. So he's not going to be mad that I say this. But he was like, how many of these defenders that you don't actually want to play on defense does Bisaccia get? I'm like, Zane looked good last year.
Yeah.
Zane was very good when he came in. I didn't see Nagler win at it with it. He said the exact same thing.
We're like, Zane was pretty darn good last year when given the opportunity. Yeah. So now I'm there too. On my initial 53 right after mini camp, I think I didn't have Zane on. I was just playing with it to try to get some extra spots somewhere. I think he's on. I don't think there's really any question about it at this point. The only thing, Zane, I hate to break it to everyone, 28 years old. He's like, the fifth oldest guy on the entire team, basically. So
he's an LDS kid, right?
Yeah, I think you might be right. But McManus and Orzic, and then Elton Jenkins, Kenny Clark, Keyshawn Nixon, and Zane Anderson. Those are the only players 28 years of age or older. And Zane and Keyshawn are the two 28-year-olds of that group. So he's an old man on this roster. So there's not a ton of like long-term upside or anything. That was the only reason I was kind of playing with it in my head too, of like, hey, could they figure out something else? Also, not for nothing, Omar Brown's had a pretty nice start to camp too. He was also a special teamer for them, did get called up. I don't think that's going to happen.
They can't keep six, man.
No. Is there another competition? Like, hey, Omar Brown's like 24. Zane Anderson's like 28, going on 29. But yeah, I think Zane Anderson makes it. I think a lot of these guys do. Welch is, I think, going back to your initial conversation at linebacker, really the interesting one here of do they go with six linebackers?
He's on the older side too, right? And again,
27, yep.
I want to point out some of these conversations that players have is influenced by like if Kingsley Enagbare gets cut, right? Just to throw another name out there. He won't come back with the Packers because he shouldn't come back with the Packers.
Correct.
Because he's been through four off seasons with the team and they said, you are not a rosterable NFL player. So what are the chances that you could change their opinion based off of what you do in a reserve role in the practice squad, right?
Yep.
Versus getting another opportunity in front of a new set of eyes with a new coaching staff and getting a fresh start with them, right?
Yep.
In that same vein, if Welch gets cut, he'll be cut the second time in 2 years after going through two camps with the Packers. Why would they come back? Yeah. Right. You're signing up for this in perpetuity, essentially, right? Which is not to say that that line of thinking is absolutely 100% true, and there aren't exceptions to that rule, but that is how players' representation generally think of those type of situations. In the past I'd used a guy like Samari Toure as another example for this, right? Where it's like, once you make the 53 and then they don't think of you as the 53 guy, you probably got to leave town at that point. You got to get in front of a new set of eyes.
I'm totally with you. Well, let's go through this because I have not taken a look at your 53 up until right now, literally as I'm looking at it right now. So let's
just kind of AcmePackingCompany.com.
Yes, Acme Pack. I guess
facelift next week.
Is this okay that we go through this, or do you want to keep the readers?
Oh, no, go for it.
I just want to make sure. I don't want to spoil everything.
You have me on for an hour. If we don't talk about this, I don't know what else we're going to go with. Oh,
yeah, because we've always had trouble filling an hour. That's always been a huge problem for us.
Zach Tom contract details.
That's a gorgeous contract, by the way, but we can get to that if we have time as well. So you've got two quarterbacks, Love and Willis, totally agreed. Nothing to converse about there. Four running backs, Jacobs, Wilson, Lloyd, and Brooks. I tend to agree. I think the Wilson, I think Lloyd, Brooks, Jacobs, not obviously.
So this is one thing that you brought up that made my face go a little bit question mark, just because it hasn't been something that's been talked about a lot.
Brooks ahead of Wilson. You
said Brooks ahead of Wilson. How come?
So he's just been playing, I think, more with the top group and is getting more of those opportunities, is in the pass blocking sets. We haven't seen a ton out of Wilson. I forget who I was having this conversation with, if it was Pete or Paul or Spoff, or I forget who it was. But anyway, the interesting thing about Wilson is, let's say, I don't even want to say the words, but let's say there's an injury to a certain number one running back. I think there's a world in which Emmanuel Wilson is the number, like the most carries for a back going into a game. Like, I think
he was the number two back on the team last year.
Yeah. So like, if you had to give like 15 carries to a guy, I don't think that guy's Chris Brooks. I don't think you're going to give Marshawn Lloyd that workload. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I don't think so. Like, I think Emmanuel Wilson, if there's an injury to Jacobs today, I think Emmanuel Wilson going into week one is probably the guy that I would bet gets the most carries. But if Jacobs is healthy, you almost kind of don't need Emmanuel Wilson. Like, Jacobs is going to get the vast majority of the carries. Marshawn Lloyd is going to, assuming he's healthy, is going to be your change of pace. Chris Brooks can carry the ball, plus is going to do all the pass protection stuff, all the third down stuff, catch the ball to the backfield. He's going to play teams, which Wilson doesn't really do.
The split back stuff where he's basically fullback in those stats and all that.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, he's a versatile player. I get why they want to keep him around. That's why I had him making the 53. I guess the crux of that debate has to center around how do you feel about Marshawn Lloyd? And I guess that is the big question mark at this point, right?
We'll be right back. Yes. So I think all four of them make the roster. Unless all of a sudden like Amar Johnson tears it up in preseason and they feel like they can get like a slight different version of Emmanuel Wilson on the practice squad and they don't need the actual Emmanuel Wilson on the active or something like that. But for now, I would say those four make it as well. So we're in lockstep there. Six wide receivers. Let me play with this one for a little bit. I'm with you, by the way. These if I were betting today, these would be my six. I do think Mecole Hardman is going to have to be the unquestioned punt returner in order for this to happen.
That's his win condition. 100%. Yes. That's what I wrote too. The top five are locked in. Christian Watson is going to come back at some point. That's six. You want to count Bo Melton. That's 6.5. What is the value in 7.5? The value has to be, he wins the punt return job. That is, you know, and maybe he can win the kick return job too. I know Busacci had talked about that a little bit. Kind of doubt it. He's definitely a better punt returner than kick returner. Keyshawn is a better kick returner than punt returner, as we've seen. Yep. Jaden Reed, even though they keep throwing him out there, is not a very good punt returner. There's definitely room to get good, much better at punt returner. Mecole Hardman has that special skill set that can actually provide to that room as that sixth receiver. But I do agree with you. That's his win condition. You got to win the punt return.
Just going back to the Melton conversation, we heard one of the takeaways from Matt on Tuesday was that it's not like a foregone conclusion that Bo can't play wide receiver anymore. They're just focusing him on corner for this training camp to see what he can do and if he can kind of add that to his resume, if you will. I do wonder.
He's not going to, it's not the Men in Black thing where like he just forgets to play wide receiver immediately.
Exactly.
He's not putting on 20 pounds to play court. Like, that's not what's happening here.
I do wonder, even if he becomes again more of like, let's just pencil Bo Melton in as like the Matthew Slater or whatever. Is Matthew Slater the Patriot guy, or am I thinking of the Rams? Slater's the opposite. All right, so Matthew Slater, the Patriots special team guy. Like, if Melton just makes it, I do wonder if Hardman's not the punt returner, if Bo is just your six until Watson comes back, that's the way to kind of still keep him on the roster. And you get him as a depth piece at corner as well. Plus he's playing on every special teams unit. Like, I do think that you don't necessarily need Hardman on this list again, unless he is the primary punt returner. If he is, that again is probably his ticket to the active 53.
Yeah.
And you know too, Justice, the other thing too is, he's to that point now where if he makes week one, he full guaranteed contract, right? If he makes it on week one, he's vested. Yeah. So that's the other thing that they're going to have to play with a little bit too, of do they want to guarantee his full contract on week one? Because again, they know that Watson is going to be coming back at some point, that they're going to potentially have Reed, Dobbs, Wicks, Golden, Williams, and Watson have no need for a wide receiver. So like, this really hinges on if they're willing to pay. And it's not like his salary is exorbitant or anything, but to pay his salary, guarantee it to be the punt returner on this team, because they're really probably not going to need him much, knock on wood, as an actual wide receiver.
And the Packers wide receiver room has significantly changed since Mecole signed that contract, right? Mecole signed that contract after the first two waves of free agency, had passed over. The Packers hadn't made a signing at wide receiver. And at that point in time, if you guys remember, the big question was, do the Packers have any speed at the position, right? And that probably is one reason why Mecole signed with the Packers. Well, since then, they've drafted Matthew Golden and Savion Williams, two guys who run very fast. So his opportunities on the offensive side are very different now, right? So if you don't want to have his contract guarantee, I don't know if you can do the same thing that you've done with like Orzich in the past, where you're like, okay, we're going to cut you at the deadline. We're going to use a waiver wire pickup to, let's say, pick up a defensive tackle, right? Or something like that at the deadline. We'll cut one of our defensive tackles and then we'll sign you the next day. Well, I don't know if Hardman will sign back with the Packers because they've now added players who can kind of replicate what he can do on the offensive side of the ball, are cheaper, are younger, they have multi-year commitments, all this stuff. And I think Mecole will still have a market because if you need a punt returner, I mean, you could sign one on the week before week one and have him ready to roll on game day, right? If that's for sure the specific role that you wanted for him to fill in. So, I don't know if they could get out of the guarantees, right? I think it kind of has to be a binary. It's like, again, I think that's why there's all that pressure on, is he going to win the punt return job?
Yeah.
Right.
Totally.
Yeah.
We're in lockstep there. Tight end. This is an interesting one. I know I totally understand the special teams argument. I don't think they have four rosterable tight ends on this right. Not to like needing that amount. And I also think that I think this is going to be Kraft, Musgrave, and Fitzpatrick. Justice has Ben Sims on the roster as well. I think there's a world in which you can get Ben Sims and Messiah Swinson back in the practice squad. And for those few games that you want four tight ends, or if you feel like you need that extra special teams body, that you can call those guys up if need be and just kind of go in that direction. I also think if there is a spot where there's a player that ends up on the 53 that is not currently on this roster in any capacity, I could see them being a little bit active on the waiver wire or something like that, where maybe they find a new number three tight end to back up Kraft and Musgrave if they're not super thrilled with either Sims or Fitzpatrick. But I do think it'll be Fitzpatrick. They did give him a little bit of bonus money. And my guess is it's three tight ends and he's the guy.
Yeah, Fitzpatrick got, I think it was pretty similar to like the high-end UDFAs. He got like 115 or something like that. Thousand, not million, by the way. Fitzpatrick started taking away reps from Sims in the second half of the season last year. Not surprised because he was a midseason pickup. I do think if one goes, it's going to be Sims. It seems like they like Fitzpatrick more in that blocker, special teams contributor role. I'm not so disillusioned that I think that they're going to be thrown to the third or fourth tight end a lot. I don't think that that's why those guys have NFL jobs. But you know, Musgrave is a little shaky, right, in terms of his health, and Bisaccia likes to keep four. So we'll see what happens.
That'll be,
I'm still going four right now, but if it's three, wouldn't be that shocked. Would be surprised a little bit if at some point during the season they didn't get up to four, even if it isn't week one, just because they generally like to have numbers there. Especially like when Musgrave and Kraft have been healthy, they want to be a 12 personnel team, right?
Yep, a little bit.
It's kind of hard to do that if you only have one backup at the position. So
Fair. Although they've shown the ability to transition to a non-12 personnel team pretty easily if like Musgrave's not playing or not playing well. So.
They have. But I mean, if you're game planning and all that stuff, like we heard it from Matt when he was talking about the pony things, right? And he's like, but it's so tough because we only really like Jones and Dylan. And if one of them get hurt, then all of our pony stuff kind of gets thrown out the window. It's like, I don't know.
Can't Bo Melton just
has to work, but
can't Bo Melton be the other tight end? Can we just add that to his list as well?
Mind you, like, this is when the Packers were only running like swing screens, like swing screen RPOs out of pony. They figured out the spinner stuff this past year. That's nice, but. Yeah, I disagree with that.
Spinner stuff is alive and well, by the way. There's been a good chunk of spinner stuff in practice, so it is alive and well. Yeah. If you're hoping that's not going anywhere, by all accounts, that's not going anywhere. Offensive line, you have nine. I would agree with that list. Could the Kadeem Telfort, John Williams, Donovan Jennings group of players battle for a 10th spot or battle with Travis Glover for one of those spots? I think absolutely. But I agree with your list of nine. If you want to check it out again, go over to acmepackingcompany.com. We have the same five defensive ends, I think, as well. I've been on the Enagbare is probably not worth the $3 million and it's probably better to go with Brenton Cox bandwagon for a while now. I think a lot of this could just comes down to Colin Oliver. And if he can show anything and be ready to go by the start of the regular season, if not, that makes it a little bit more interesting. And, you know, pass rushers are tough to find. So I could easily see a world in which they keep six and Enagbare gets a spot here as well. But I do think five is workable. Defensive tackle is where it starts to get another really interesting conversation. You've got Clark, Wyatt, Brooks, Wooden, and Stackhouse. Stackhouse has been really fun. Really, really fun. I talked about it on Wednesday.
I put him in there. You guys can't stop talking about him.
Well, here's the thing. I'm already to the point where I don't know how you cut that guy. Like, he's already shown upside to the point where, like, yeah, he's probably not a finished product and he's going to, you know, probably need some time to be, you know, good against starters and things like that. I just already don't know how you're like, yeah, we're just going to subject him to waivers. It could easily be wrong, but I easily want him on the roster at this point. And then it just becomes interesting because you keep six. Does Brinson get a shot there as well? Is Brinson cuttable as a six round guy? Maybe / probably. Can I have a kind of hot take here? I think Carl Brooks has work to do. I think Wooden is ahead of Carl Brooks right now. Wyatt and Clark aren't going anywhere. Stackhouse has looked good. Brinson, they just spent a draft pick on. I don't think he's going to get cut. I'm not saying that, like, look out, you know, here comes the cut of Carl Brooks or anything like that. I'm just saying he's been very, very quiet. Again, it was 2 days of pads, so whatever. Take it for what it's worth. But I've really liked what I've seen out of Colby Wooden so far. Like, if you told me right now one of Wooden or Brooks make it, I think I might go with Colby Wooden ahead of him because I just think he's been a little bit stronger, a little bit more impactful. But I'm interested of how this one plays out for sure.
When I released that was one of the biggest pushbacks I got was, why do you have Wooden making the roster? Just cut him. And
yeah, I don't think
when Kenny wasn't able to practice, Wooden was the starter.
Yeah. And he's looked good.
I don't think people realize that. So, like,
this is the best we've seen Colby Wooden look at any point. I think he's got a really good shot.
I don't think he's going anywhere.
Yeah.
I don't think he's going anywhere. So, obviously things could change down the line. Definitely a more fluid situation than some of the other positions. But right now, if you ask me who the number three defensive tackle on this team is, I'd probably say, based off of at least the coaching staff, not off of like what I think of the player or anything like that, like based on how the coaching staff is rotating these guys, I think they like Wooden as the third guy right now. So
I think so too. I think he's very much in that spot right now. So yeah, I don't see him necessarily going anywhere. That's a really interesting one. We'll see if Brinson can, you know, kind of earn that spot too. Meanwhile, Joe Burrow is talking about TJ Slayton's impact over in Cincinnati already. So big TJ Slayton getting some shout outs from his quarterback over with the Bengals. Linebackers, you have five. We're on the same page there. Safeties, you have five. We're on the same page there. Kicker, punter, long snappers, all the same. This is where we're going to have some fun conversation, I think, is the corner position. All right, Nixon, Hobbs, Valentine, all we're gravy on that. You have Bo Melton and Gregory Jr. I think Gregory Jr. has next to 0% chance of making this team. Just my two cents. I know he's got some time in those spots. He has not made the most of that time in those spots. I'll just maybe put it that way. I also think they really like Kamal Haddon, and I think Kamal Haddon's been really good. And they've been like the floor comments the other day about Kalen King. And again, coaches lie, who knows, but Kalen King had a nice pick six, a nice sack the other day. He's been playing well, and I'm not a Kalen King guy. Certainly not. I think compared to consensus, I would probably be a little bit lower than most on Kalen King, but I think he's got a great chance to make the team. I think this, I would probably come pretty close to locking in Haddon as the four. And then I think this is Kalen King, Micah Robinson, Bo Melton fighting for one or two spots as the five and six.
Okay. That's good information to know. Yeah. I mean, I wrote in there, I was like the least confident spot on this entire roster that I'm just not confident in pegging down who that fifth cornerback is going to end up being, assuming sure. That, you know.
I'm going to have so much egg on my face when you replay this for me when Gregory Jr. makes the team, by the way.
I was like, it's simple. He's played special teams. They got a lot of special teams reps that they have to replace. Like, I don't know anything that's happening at that deep into the cornerback depth chart. So I was just like, yeah, I put Gregory Jr., treat it as TBD.
Sure.
I'm the least confident. You've heard me have a ton of pushback with Andy on this episode already, where I'm like, oh, well, here's the counterpoint. If you want to say Gregory Jr. isn't making this team, I'm not going to argue with you. I don't know who the fifth cornerback is going to be.
I think Kamal Haddon's going to be the fourth. And then I think it gets a lot more interesting after that. Like I said, I think Kalen King, Bo Melton, Micah Robinson, and anyone with cornerback next to their name. And I'll put Gregory Jr. in that conversation as well. Sincerely, like, anyone with cornerback next to their name, I think, has the opportunity to go and get that fifth or maybe even sixth corner spot if they want to go in that direction. So it's wide open. Like, if Tyron Herring made he had a nice interception the other day, if he had a great preseason, like, could he get one of those? Yeah, absolutely. Like, Isaiah Dunn, sure. Why the heck not? Like, anyone that has corner next
all
to their name
are possible. We've had a receiver transition to DB already. Like, anything is on the table. There are no bad ideas right now.
Yeah, they're open to anything at this point. So I guess I shouldn't have poo-pooed on Gregory Jr. quite that easy, but I think he's got a couple guys to jump over. I'll just put it that way at this point. Yeah, I like overall the 53, though. I think there's going to be some really interesting conversations. And as I think the crux of this conversation was, special teams is definitely going to have a huge impact in who ultimately does make that team, which is, again, why Zane Anderson, Christian Welch, Bo Melton, you know, guys like that are going to be really interesting to see how they kind of value some of those. Chris Brooks is another one that might have a leg up on Emmanuel Wilson if they do only keep three running backs because of that special teams value. So now, very, very fun conversation and very fun 53. Go check it out over on acmepackingcompany.com. It's always fun to kind of read all the details that Justice has in between all the names and stuff as well. All right, let's talk offensive line really quick. We talked a little bit about Jordan Morgan. We heard on Wednesday that they're not necessarily ruling out a competition throughout the season and maybe some rotations. I do think they're going to find a way to get Jordan Morgan in there. They did say that now that the offensive line is solidified, and if we see Banks out there and we see Jenkins out there a little bit more, that we're going to start seeing more of a competition between Rashid Walker and Jordan Morgan. I will say we heard that ahead of time, and then we haven't seen it yet because of the injuries. Do you think the whole Rashid Walker thing from the other day is playing even a little bit more of a factor into this, or is this just status quo? We're going to see what, you know, Morgan can do at left tackle.
So I don't think the Rashid Walker thing, fight, scuffle, whatever the heck you want to call it, that led to the team doing a lap around the field. Like, dog, it's training camp. These are the same guys banging the same heads over and over again. I know the pads just came on, but
they've been
working against each other in the heat for all offseason, right? This stuff is bound to happen, right? It's why people like these, it's why coaches like these joint practices, so that you could hit a target that does not have a Packers logo on the side of the helmet, right? Based off of how they have operated this entire offseason, it's hard for me, because I don't think they're good. If they're doing that rotation thing that Stenovich talked about, where, you know, hey, we've done this with Jordan Runyon, we've done this with Jordan Morgan, we've done this with Sean Ryan, and we've rotated them. You rotated them at right guard. You didn't rotate them on Jordan Love's blind side, right? It's hard for me to believe that you're actually going to rotate guys at left tackle. So,
Time out. We have seen this, though. Yash and Rashid did the rotation at left tackle a couple years ago. So I think Green Bay, messaging with Bukowski a little bit, because he's like, you know, with Morgan not doing left tackle and stuff. And I'm like, I think it's honestly just because they had the openings at, you know, with Banks out and with Jenkins out, and they were just able to get all those guys out there. I think Green Bay is literally a, like, blind side, right tackle, center, left guard, right guard. I honestly don't think they care. And I honestly believe, like, if you are out there on one of the offensive line spots, they feel like you're training just as much for any of the other spots, even if that's not where you're going to be. Like, I honestly think we've heard forever this idea that, listen, this is not Madden. You can't just take the left tackle and go up there into player management and move it to right guard. That's not how this works. I think they think it does. I honestly think that they are in the player management tool in Madden and just being like, oh, you know, you're a 360-pound, you know, Kadeem Telford at right tackle. Guess what? Today we went into player management and you're a left guard now. So get out there and play left guard. I honestly think that's how they view it at this point.
I mean, the rotating guys mid game, something that does not happen at the NFL level. Right. I mean, they do a lot of funky things on the offensive line. This is the point that I wanted to make, though.
Sure.
I do think that they ultimately want Jordan Morgan to be their left tackle, because the difference between what Zach Tom got and what Rashid Walker is probably going to get next offseason, whether it's with the Packers or another team, it's not going to be that different, man. No. It really isn't. Like, that Zach Tom deal is really good for Green Bay, and we could talk about that if you want. But I think ultimately what they want to do is make sure that they don't need a backup plan for Jordan Morgan at left tackle next year, because Walker's deal is expiring. Sure. They want him to bank these reps, right? They want him to prove that he could be a left tackle. And then they're probably going to play him at right guard, and they'll have maybe have him rotate with Sean Ryan. Based off of how they've operated this offseason, that seems to be really the only thing that makes sense to me. And I know guys bounce around all the time. Jordan Morgan even played left guard a little bit because of the Banks injury and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think they just want to be like, okay, we'll get you playing time. We'll get you NFL reps. You'll be able to develop. You're not going to have the shoulder injury that you dealt with literally all last regular season, right? If you guys, people forget about that too when they talk about Morgan, is that he was banged up since week one.
Yep.
But they want to make sure that it's like, okay, knock on wood, like, we do have this break in case of emergency thing with Anthony Belton, right? But we want to make sure that we don't have to double triple down on a potential starting left tackle next year, and that we can at least have you be the leader. And then Anthony Belton is the new Jordan Morgan, right? Where it's okay, is he going to compete at left tackle? Oh, is he going to compete at right guard? Oh, are we going to rotate? Like, we have our new rotational lineman. So I think that's the Packers' intent, personally. And even they kind of backed down on some of the stuff. Like, Goot was like, yeah, left tackle is an open competition, but obviously Walker has experience, and it would have to take some, like, it would have to be a pretty impressive thing for him to get knocked out of the lineup and stuff. And I'm like, okay, you're just banking reps then. And that's fine. Yeah. It's training camp. You know, I'd rather Morgan be on the field right now, if he's going to actually play offensive line in the regular season, than Travis Glover getting tackle reps with the ones, right? Walker needs a breather or something like that. So yeah, I don't see the harm in it. I just don't necessarily think that all of the words that have come out from the Packers during these press conferences align with their actual actions.
If I told you next year, the starting offensive line would either be Morgan, Banks, Jenkins, Morgan, Banks, Jenkins, Belton, and Tom, or Belton, Banks, Jenkins, Morgan, and Tom. So same thing, except Belton at left tackle, Morgan at right guard, or Morgan at left tackle and Belton at right guard. Which one do you think would be more likely?
Me personally, I think Belton's a guard, and I've thought Belton's a guard since the draft process. I know people keep talking about his footwork and stuff like that. On the relative scale of NFL offensive linemen, especially tackles, I don't know if his footwork is actually that good that size. What it can do is put his head through something, right? I think that translates a lot better at the guard position. I actually think that that's kind of the Packers' ideal plan for 2026.
Yeah.
The player I actually have the biggest question about is Jenkins at center. Yeah. I think Morgan is going to be their left tackle. I think Belton is going to be their right guard. Obviously, the other two guys are signed. And then Jenkins, it's, all right, $20 million. Is he worth it for 1 year, right?
And you might have a choice between Jenkins at $20 million, Sean Ryan at $12 million, or Jacob Monk at $2 million or something like that, or $1.5 million. So they're definitely
plus potential. You have free agency, you have the draft. Yes. If you clear $20 million, the Packers are gonna have some cap space, a little bit. It's like a sliver of cap space going into next year. So if the Packers want to get rid of $20 million of cap space by letting go of Jenkins, they can go into the free agency market and probably sign two guys for the year one cap hits that it's going to cost to keep Jenkins on the roster. So
no question.
Yeah, I mean, that's ultimately why Jenkins was like, yo,
give me some guarantees.
I get a new deal or some sort of assurances that I'm going to be around next year. This is not good.
All right, a couple quick ones. Let's talk about Zach Tom. Cap number, $7.4 million, $12.1 million, $18 million, 24.0, basically 30.0. Those are your next 5 years of cap hits for Zach Tom. I thought he was going to get about 25 per on this free agent market. He's making 18 less than that this year, 13 less than that the following year, 7 less than that, 1 less than that, and then 1 year of $5 million more than $25 million in his final year, which by 2029, who knows what crappy tackle is going to be making $30 million by that point in time if things continue to go up. Dan Moore might be at $70 million by that point in time. I have no words. It's a beautiful deal for Green Bay. We'll be right back.
Yeah, and I think it got stressed even more when Bernhard Reitman, who a non-Pro Bowl, non-All-Pro tackle, right, for Indy. I think same draft class. I think he was drafted in the third instead of Tom in the fourth, right? He got $25 million per year and $60 million in guarantees. That is literally twice the amount that Zach Tom got. Zach Tom has no guarantees beyond his signing bonus. Now, functionally, the Packers are not going to cut him within the next 3 years, right? Because of how the cap hits kind of work out. So cash flow wise, he's going to make 31 and a half this year. Good year to be Zach Tom. Good year to be Zach Tom. 6.1 next year. And then 12 in 2027. So over the next 3 years, he is making 16 and a half per year. That's what you got to come away with. Gorgeous. He's making 16 and a half over the next 3 years per year. And then the Packers essentially have it's salary, but it's unguaranteed salary.
Yep.
And they can create cap space if they release him, right? So functionally, the last 2 years of his contract work out as team options that the team just has to decide before week one of the regular season. And those are worth 18 and 24 million. The numbers get big toward the end of it. The cap is also going to go up $25 million per year, right?
Get a free Zach Tom every year.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, this is an incredible deal for the Packers. Because even like the Jenkins deal was near the top of the market, but it got passed over very quickly, right? Yep. Rashawn Gary is kind of the same situation where guys like George Karlaftis are making damn near as much as Rashawn Gary at this point. But this Tom deal was like, yo, he basically got the same as like Dan Moore, and that's like the floor now for a starting tackle. So
I was pretty stunned that this was all that he got. And again, I don't want to like, do we know anything about Michael Hoffman of Slam for his agent?
No.
I don't know. I've never heard of it either.
I don't know him.
Yep. Not familiar either. But I'm not saying again, I'm sure that phone call home to his family was, you know, not like, oh, I only got, you know what, $88 million or whatever. Like it's a pretty good phone call home to the family, but it definitely felt like a huge win for Green Bay. All right, last but not least.
Again, he's getting 31 and a half this year, right? Which is why, which is how the Packers can structure these deals, where you could see when it was initially reported, right? Biggest signing bonus in the history of offensive linemen. Second largest signing bonus was David Bakhtiari, the last tackle contract the Packers got done. The Packers will give you a ton of money up front to be like, okay, but this is the only guarantee that you get, and I get you on a 4-year extension. So you're under contract for 5 years, right? They're willing to pay the money up front to get that in exchange. I'm honestly still pretty surprised that this team can operate this way, where you have no rolling guarantees, where it's, hey, next offseason, if you're on the team by or on the roster by the third day of the new league year, then your 2027 salary gets guaranteed and stuff like that. The Packers have none of that. The Packers have not budged. They said, look, screw all that. We're going to keep it simple. Would you like $30 million up front? We get you for the next 5 years. And guys keep saying yes. So it's hard to tell the Packers that they're wrong.
But did you hear me ask Goody about it?
For them.
I asked Goody about their 4-year contract structure. It was like the second or third question.
I listened to the presser. I can't remember.
Yeah, I basically said, like, you know, this year there were 6 guys who got 4-year deals in free agency. You guys had 2 of the 6. You had 2 more last year with Josh Jacobs and Xavier McKinney. Zach Tom was a 4-year extension, et cetera. Why, when the league is going away from these 4-year deals, have you guys, you know, continued to go in that direction? And I was hoping for a little bit more. I got basically what I expected, though, of just like, you know, it's a contract structure that we like. It's been very beneficial for us. And, you know, it's very, very bland whatever. Yeah, exactly. So I was hoping to get a little bit more of a tidbit there, but I kind of got what I was mostly expecting of just kind of saying like, yeah, just it's worked for us, whatever, it is what it is. But I try to ask.
I don't think management wants to be too upfront about wins over labor.
Right? Do you think Goody had any idea, by the way, that do you think he had any idea that there was only like 6 players that signed 4-year deals?
You know, Mike, I don't know if Russ Ball definitely does.
That was my point.
Russ Ball absolutely not does.
It almost felt more of like you know, even with Goody of like, I don't know, this is a Russ Ball thing, you know, like sort of thing. So it is, I tried to get a little bit more. We didn't. It's all good. We move on and we'll try to ask it better maybe next time or whatever. But last but not least, I'm hoping this might go nowhere. If you already saw, did you see my tweet or did you look up the Packers rookie Madden ratings?
I saw it in a glance.
Okay, good.
I didn't retain any information. I'm aware that it's out there.
All right, so I'm gonna go through, and I want you to predict what their Madden rating is. We'll see how close you can get on each of these for their rookie Madden ratings. Matthew Golden, first round pick.
Man, so I haven't played Madden in a couple of years. Like a 74 or something. Does that sound right? Am I in the 76. Right range?
76. You're right. You're right there.
So okay. All right.
Yep. All right. Anthony Belton.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, not bad.
Ooh, Anthony Belton is probably much lower. Is he like a 69?
71, so you're 2 off again. So you're right there. Savion Williams.
I want to say 68, but I'm going to have to add 270.
70 it is. 70 exactly.
All right, we figured out the algorithm. We figured out the formula.
Baron Sorrell.
Ooh. Is he also a 70?
He also is a 70, correct. You're just crushing it.
I'm getting good at this. Let's go. Right.
Colin Oliver.
Ooh, 69, but he probably plays better than his rating.
He's a 70, so you're one off. It's still really good. I know. Warren Brinson.
See, here's the drop off, because I don't think any of the guys who are actually developing Madden even know who the heck these players are. There's no way. The headshots are right. The player models look crazy. Let's go like 66.
You nailed it. 66. You were on a roll now. Micah Robinson.
Probably the same, 65, 66, I would assume.
67, so one off again. We'll give you one off. And then John Williams, final one.
66 again. Let's just keep it going.
Your biggest miss so far, 63 for John Williams. So they're not.
Oh, they hate Williams the boy.
They hate John Williams.
Oh.
Absolutely hate him. Maybe it's that tackle, though. So maybe if you move him to guard, he gets kicked up a couple spots or something. So yeah, Matthew Golden, 76, Belton, 71, Savion Sorrell and Oliver, 70, Micah, 67, Brinson, 66, and John Williams, 63 are your rookie Madden ratings, which are the most important things that we've ever discussed on the history of the Packaday podcast. Justice, I cannot thank you enough for joining us. I appreciate you a ton. What do you got coming out on acmepackingcompany.com?
Dude, we're having like full site relaunch in a couple days. So
we love that
the comment section is going to look a little different. The whole presentation is going to look a little different. I think all of it's good. I always go into change very skeptically, right?
Yep.
I assume a lot of people probably do the same type of thing. But yeah, I think it's going to be really good for the site.
Awesome. Excited for you guys.
It's going to be a lot better for mobile. It's going to be a lot better to read pages and not have crazy pop-ups and stuff like that. So that'll all be good. Really excited about next week. I think August 5th is when the button gets pressed. So
cool. Well, good luck to you guys with that. Looking forward to it. You guys absolutely kill it. And of course, make sure you're following Justice over there, as well as the rest of the team, who all does an incredible job over at acmepackingcompany.com. Follow him on social media at JUMOSQ. Any final thoughts today, Justo?
I do want to say one thing, because
let's do it.
So there's been a couple of things where, like, just Bisaccia's name gets thrown out on social media, and okay. I see the reaction from Packers fans, and they're like, he's a terrorist, get rid of him, we need a new special teams coordinator. I still think Rich Bisaccia is really good at this job, man. And it's not just that the players like him. I know the kicking game hasn't been great under him. I think a lot of that has to do with personnel. Yep. Obviously, he had a hand to play in the Anders Carlson thing, but yep. They picked the third kicker off the board in a two-kicker draft. That was consensus at the time. And the Packers didn't have any they had cash. They didn't have any cap space to use on a veteran kicker. We've seen him develop Waylon. I don't think Orzich is an issue at this point.
Yep. Agreed.
Keyshawn obviously had his success. Punt returner has been a giant flub. I think a lot of that has to do with Amari Rodgers was horrendous as a punt returner. And Jaden Reed isn't as bad, but he certainly isn't good, right? But the kick coverage units, the protection units, those are the things that I really think show the talent of your special teams coordinator, because those are things that you can't really just go out and buy, right? If you want to go buy a punt returner, you can go buy a punt returner, right? The Packers just did it with Mecole Hardman. If you want to go buy a kicker, you can go buy a kicker. They just did it with Brandon McManus, right?
Sure.
He developed Waylon, so they didn't have to go buy a punter. I don't think you got to go buy a long snapper in this league. They already got a kick returner that they developed. But I think the kick coverage units and the protection units are really what you should be judging a special teams coach off of, not the actual like individual specialists who probably have the most impact of the way those things go, which I know seems counterintuitive. But ultimately that's a personnel decision. So I would just like to name myself the leader of the Rich Bisaccia fan club, apparently, because I don't know why people want to get rid of him. I think he's been doing a pretty good job and everyone loves him. So
I think he's a great assistant coach. I want to see what the special teams can do this year. I went to fire him. I think they were more than right to keep him. I don't know that I would have extended him, but I'm totally fine with him still being the special teams coach. I am very excited to see if he can, you know, just get that unit a little bit off, just middle of the league.
All right. I can work with that. Yeah. What a
weird. So now we got to go watch the tape. Now we got to go watch the tape. Now we're officially on tape watch.
I'm going to write it up and then I'm going to play some college football 26, baby. So I'm going to,
there you go. That works. Well, enjoy the heck out of that. I appreciate you a ton. Again, follow him, JUMOSQ, acmepackingcompany.com. That does it for us today, but until next time, and as always, go Packo.